Okay, so we're on to we're on to week five in the Relate series. Today we're going to have a look at the next two letters, which are fitting into the acronym of called Ask and Talk, which are the two components of communication. First, just a little bit of a review from last week. Last week we discussed what we called the glue of all relationships, the idea, the concept of love, which is the goal of every relationship. The foundation of relationship is respect, but the goal is connection, is love. We defined love as both a noun and a verb. It's an emotion, it's a constant feeling of attachment and connection to the other person. It's a deep passion for the other person in the relationship. But, as we said, very, very much so, it's also a verb. It's a verb where you actually actively have to ignite the love. And we talked about giving. We talked about giving as a consequence of love, but also as a means to bring about love. Giving is what fuels and creates and develops the feelings of love. And what we did for most of the time is we developed the distinction between selfish love and selfless love. And we said that selfless love is based on three things. Based on respect, as we talked about in the first week. It's created through investing in the other person. The more we invest in the other person, the more we're able to love them selflessly. And most importantly, we ended off with the idea of loving the whole person. And the difference between selfish love is when you only love the part of the person that you like. Selfless love is when you can accept and love the entire person. That's just a very, very brief summary of last week. Today we're going to begin to deal with communication. And communication is really broken up into two parts. What I've called ask and talk. I've called it ask because it fits into the acronym, but what I really mean is listening and talking. Asking in the sense of understanding and inquiring about the other person and understanding the viewpoint of the other person. But to develop this whole idea, we need to really explore the fundamental concepts of communication. See, up to now we've discussed the foundations of all relationship. We've discussed respect, we've discussed love, but as we said before, relationships are two-way, right? Relationships are two worlds coming together, two worlds merging. So, for the love and respect to really work, right? For love and respect to be really felt by both people, to be transmitted back and forth from one person to the other, it has to be supported and fueled and nurtured by effective communication. Okay? And what we need to explore, which we've done in part in different times over the years, but we need to explore it properly, is the power of communication. The power of words. Communication is not only words, of course, but the power of communication, the power of words. In mysticism, in Kabbalah, there's an analogy that's given that compares words or the person who speaks the words to a horse and its rider, based on a pasuk, based on a verse in the Chumash. Why does it compare it to that? When a rider rides a horse, the horse has no decision-making power. Right? The horse is an instinctive animal. The horse doesn't make decisions. The horse doesn't really have control. One would hope that the human being who rides the horse controls the horse. This analogy, by the way, could be with anything, but it's based on a verse that talks about a horse and its rider. But the rider is the one that hopefully guides the horse in horse riding. However, when a rider sits on a horse and guides the horse and makes the decisions of where the horse should turn and where it should go, the horse has the ability to carry the rider a lot faster and a lot further than he could go on his own. You understand? In other words, the horse itself has no control. The decisions and the driving is up to the rider, but nevertheless, the rider can achieve destinations and can achieve speed to much, much greater levels together with the horse that he could achieve on his own. So why is that an analogy for words? The reason is because speech is the same thing. Words, we are taught, really are nothing. Words are inanimate things, we are taught. Meaning, words is only as good as the content you put into them. Babies make up words that don't make any sense. Sometimes people babble and say things that don't make any sense. We could put any amount of words together and not necessarily will the sentence make any sense, right? So words themselves are nothing. It's really about the content that we put into the words. But the amazing thing is that the power of words is so strong that even though words themselves are nothing and it's really got more to do with the content we put into words, but somehow that content is fuel that what's behind the words, what's behind the content, is developed and inflamed and nurtured to such an incredible degree only with words than it would be without words. Both in the positive and the negative, right? So for example, this works on all levels of the way we function. For example, when we think, a person often understands a concept. I'm sure every one of you must have had this experience at one time or another. We understand the concept. And then you try and explain it to someone else. And suddenly when you explain it to someone else, it becomes clearer. Suddenly when you explain it to someone else, you put the idea into words. Suddenly you think of angles, you think of things you could describe and explain this idea that you didn't think of before. In other words, as soon as you put this intellectual concept into words, suddenly it takes on a whole new life. Suddenly it's upgraded to a whole new level that it wouldn't have been before it was put into words. The content hasn't changed. The words themselves are nothing. I'm just putting the content into words, but yet, when I put them into words, the power of words are incredible. The same thing is with emotions, both in the positive and the negative. We know that when a person speaks, and someone begins speaking about something that they're very upset about, they might start speaking slowly, but you'll notice when a person starts to speak passionately about something they're very, very passionate about, suddenly it takes a few minutes and they're screaming and shouting. Why? They weren't screaming and shouting before, they were perfectly quiet. But that's what happens when, as soon as you put an emotion into words, the words somehow inflame the emotion. That's why I've said before that a great strategy in anger management is to wait 10 seconds before you say anything. Right? Because what happens is words inflame anger, and the absence of words diffuse an emotion. Okay, so when you, if you promise yourself that every time you feel angry, you will just wait 10 seconds, you'll count to 10, there's a good chance that by the end of 10, the emotion is calmed down. Whereas if you start to speak, it will get worse. Because words do that to emotions. Okay. And of course, the same thing is, as we will talk a bit later or next week as well, same thing is with positive emotions, with respect and love. The more we put them into words, the stronger they become. Now, we know the power of words is so strong. The power of words is so strong that God's relationship to the world, our sources tell us, is through words. Right? When we talk, when we read in the Chumash about the 6 days of creation, it's all about words. God created the world by words. That's our tradition. That's our story. That's our tradition. He didn't make the world. He spoke, and the world became. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, one of the foundations of our faith is we actually don't believe that God has any physical form. So, obviously, when the Torah says that He speaks, or He does, or He looks, or He hears, or He's upset, or He's angry, this is all imagery that represent different functions. But yet, the imagery that the Torah chooses to use to describe the connection, the relationship that God has with the world, is communication, is words. And God spoke, and He said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Let there be a heaven, and there was a heaven, right? So it's all about words. In fact, we have a tradition that the world was created with 10 utterances called the Asara Mamarot, the 10 utterances, all about words. Now, we've said this before, but communication actually describes the essence of the human being. As much as words are nothing, but it's interesting that communication is actually what identifies us as human beings. Why is that? Because we have a famous idea that the world is divided into four parts. There's domem, which is the inanimate, things that have no life, like, or apparently have no life, like stones and minerals and rocks and sand, etc. We have tzomeach, the things that grow, vegetation, trees, flowers. We have chai, the animal kingdom, and then we have the human being. But the fascinating thing is that when the human being is described, it's not described by our intellect, by our understanding. The term in Hebrew used to identify the human being as the fourth component of creation is medaber. Medaber means the speaker, the communicator. At the very beginning of Genesis, where God creates the first human being, it says that he blew into Adam a soul of life. He blew into his nostrils a soul of life. And it says, Vayhi Adam l'nefesh chaya, which loosely translated means the man became a living soul. Right? But there's a translation on Chumash called the Targum. The Targum is in Aramaic, it's the first translation of the Torah, ancient translation, long before Sansino and Archgol. It was written, we are told, one of the great Talmudic sages, and was written by divine inspiration. It's a holy translation. And the translation in the Targum of the word and the man became a living soul, he doesn't translate it that way. When it says the person became a nefesh chaya, living soul, he translates it as the person became a ruach memalala, a speaking spirit. A speaking spirit. Amazing thing. In other words, what does the soul give to the person? The ability to speak, the ability to communicate. In fact, I'll tell you a fascinating off-the-topic thing. There's a tradition that the Maharal of Prague, I'm sure some of you must have heard of this, made a golem, made a person. I'm sure some of you must have heard of this, right? He lived about 500 years ago. He was a great, great Kabbalist, and delving into the works of mysticism, he formed out of clay what appeared to be a human being that would assist the Jewish community in the blood libels and I think it's a fascinating story. It's a very shrouded in mystery. No one knows exactly how it worked and what exactly how it happened, etc. And apparently it's based on other episodes like that in the Talmud, where we have documented that certain great sages, through the powers of Kabbalah, were able and understanding the secrets of creation, were able to form a being that functions like a human being. Yet there's one tradition that's very, very clear about this, with the Maharal and both with the sages of the Talmud that were able to do this. And that is that being functioned completely like a human being, with one exception: it could not talk. Because the tradition is that even the greatest mystic, who can maybe create different things and do wonderful different miracles, no one can ever create a soul that talks. That's a godly, completely a godly experience. It's because communication on a different level. Communication is what describes the essence of the human being. We need to understand why, but that's what it is. So the power of words is very, very strong. And we're going to explore why that is in a second, right? But the first point that a person needs to ponder and to understand is this. If communication is so strong, it's got to be two things. It's got to be effective and it's got to be positive. Because as much as words and communication can build a relationship, words and communication can destroy a relationship. Words is like a high voltage piece of energy. And if used correctly, it can do amazing things. If used badly, it can do terrible things. So it's not just about learning to communicate, it's about learning to communicate effectively, learning to communicate in a way that is positive, in a way that it builds a relationship, right? The absence of communication equals a very dull relationship. The absence of communication will not let a relationship thrive or develop. But communication will, but it needs to be positive and it needs to be effective. And that's what we need to learn, the art of effective communication. In order that communication can then fuel and support and convey the love and respect that we spoke about over the last few weeks. So let's revisit, because I think we've done this way in the back in the past, but let's revisit the concept of effective communication and why it's so important. And what is real communication? So the two points that I wanted to mention was, number one, the Talmud tells us, and we know this to be a scientific reality, that animals also have a form of communication. Animals also communicate. There are messages that animals send to each other. Other animals pick up what other animals are going to do, whether they're hungry, they're tired, they're going to attack, they're scared, they're safe, etc. And here we are saying that communication is the essence of the human being, but yet animals also have communication. In fact, we are taught that King Solomon, who was the wisest of all men, was able to understand the language of the birds. He was able to understand the language of the animals, whatever that means. He was able to pick up the language of the communication of animals. So obviously the first thing we need to understand is, what actually is the essential difference then between the language of animals and the language of human beings? And this is an incredibly important concept, because what we'll explore is that unfortunately very often human beings communicate like animals rather than like human beings. In other words, they use a communication which is an animalistic type of communication rather than a human communication. Because when we talk about communication and words being the essence, describing the uniqueness and the essence of the human being, what we're talking about is a specific type of communication. So there's a famous passage, which we've quoted before, that comes from Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of the Fathers. The Ethics of the Fathers is a, for those who are not familiar, is a collection of Mishnaic teachings, Talmudic teachings, that deal with morality, with ethics, with social conduct, with all sort of positive areas of life that is put together in 6 chapters. In fact, there's a custom between, many people have a custom between Passover and Rosh Hashanah, it's coming to an end now actually, that every Shabbat they study one chapter of Pirkei Avot and then start again, and it goes for a few cycles. In Pirkei Avot, there's a passage, a famous passage, one of the sages says, and I forget now who it was, but one of the great sages said the following. He said that all my life I have grown up among the wise, and I've never found anything better for the person than shtika. Shtika means silence. So the best thing is to be quiet. Now, of course, that's problematic, because we just spent 15 minutes explaining that the essence of the human being is communication. We are defined by words. We are defined by speaking. So why would the sage suggest that the best thing for the person is silence? Right? In fact, the Talmud even says, a word is worth 1 coin and silence is worth 2. So here again, silence seems to be better than speaking. Although, to digress for a moment, there's a little cute story. There was one time that a person went, had an audience with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe wanted, the Rebbe wanted some information from him that he was reluctant to share. He was embarrassed, he was uncomfortable sharing something that was important, but the Rebbe really wanted him to share that information. So when the Rebbe sort of pressed him a bit, he responded. He thought that would work, obviously. You know, with the Rebbe, what do? You respond with a piece of Talmud. He responded with the Talmudic passage that a word is worth 1 coin, but silence is worth 2. And he thought he'd get off the hook with that. So the Rebbe turned to him and says, you don't understand. That's true, but the problem is, silence you can only do once. Every word is worth 1, so when you talk a lot, it actually comes out to be worth more, right? Okay, that was a cute exchange. But we need to understand, what is the concept there? What is better, silence or speaking? So to understand all of this, we need to understand the following. Many times we've described the uniqueness of a human being as the ability to go beyond ourselves, to go out of our world, right? Which is something that only a human being can do, that no other creation can do. The definition of a creation, normally, means that something is created in a particular context and it's limited to that context. So a lamb has a particular personality and will never, never adopt a personality of a bull, of an ox, right? That's the way it is. Everything is created in a particular, has particular definitions, has particular characteristics, has particular personalities, and everything is locked into that personality. We are taught even that angels have a personality. And that angels are also trapped and locked into their personality. Their personality might be very pure, might be great, might be godly, but it's a personality. There are angels of love, there are angels of fear, We are taught that there's camps of angels that sing and praise God in the context of passionate love. There are angels that sing and praise God in the context of fear. And they never cross. They just cannot do the other. The ones of love are limited to love. The other ones are limited to fear. They cannot go beyond their own personality. Right? So angels are creations. Angels have personality. Everything in the world has a personality. And the reason for that is because the definition of creation, right? Kabbalistically, the definition of creation is definition. Creation means when you have something that has a particular definition. It's something and it's not something else. Only God is undefined. Right? Only God, the definition of God is that He's not defined. Do you know what I mean? That He's everything, that He can be everything. He's not defined to one thing. There's one exception to this in the creation, and that is the human being. God invested into the human being a divine energy that allows a human being to change. Right? That allows a human being to go beyond their own created context. That allows a human being to connect to something that is not him or her. Okay, we clear? Now obviously that's within limitations. A human being has to remain a human being. We cannot become an animal or something else. But it does mean that we're not limited to our personality. We're not limited to seeing the world in the way we were born to see the world. Because everyone is born to see the world in a particular way. Because we all have our defined personalities. But we're not limited to that personality. We're not bound by that personality. The human being has the ability to relate, to connect, to see, to absorb, to appreciate another world, another personality. And that's why we've spoken so many times that the real perfection of a human being is when we learn to adopt, we learn to absorb things in our personality that are not part of who we really are. That if we are chesed, if we are kindness, we learn to do gvura. If we gvura, we learn to do chesed. Right? We see things from different angles. We learn to absorb within our personality and to behave and really intrinsically adopt different parts of our personality that is not a natural disposition. How do we do that? We do that through relationships. That is the essence of relationships. Relationships is what, as we spoke about the first week, relationships is what allows us to change. Because the relationships, when we relate to other people, relationships is what allows us to come into contact with a different reality. That's why I said in the beginning that a child is born self-centered. For the first few years of the child, there are no real relationships, from the child's point of view at least, because the child is busy discovering who they are. When they discover who they are, then they're given the opportunity to relate to others and discover different worlds. So relationships is really the essence of the human being, because relationships is what allows us to appreciate and to discover and to connect to different realities, different perspectives, different ways of seeing things. How's that done? That's done through communication. Communication is not just sharing information. Okay. Communication is the waves, the energy, the mechanism through which the worlds come together, through which we connect to other people. It's a way of connecting us, of binding us. It's a way of us sharing each other with each other. It's a way of understanding each other. Therefore, true communication means I don't just transmit information. True communication means I talk to you, not at you. I talk to your world. I talk in a way where something leaves my reality and enters into your reality. In other words, communication is what allows me to go beyond myself into your world. Let's give a simple physical imagery analogy. If you go to an optometrist because you have problems with your eyes, and you want glasses. So obviously, you're looking for the expertise of the optometrist. Otherwise, you could manufacture the glasses yourself. But you can't do that because you don't know anything about eyesight and vision and glasses, right? So you go to him for him to share something that is part of his world, because that's what you want. You want his expertise. So imagine you go to an optometrist. This is not my analogy. Stephen Covey gives this in one of his writings. And the optometrist takes off his glasses and say, listen, here, take my glasses, you can see. You put on the glasses, you can't see a thing. So you say, these are no good. He says, what do you mean these are no good? I'm the optometrist. You're telling me it's no good? Right? So you say to him, of course it's good glasses, but it's good glasses through which you can see the world. This is not glasses that I can see the world. Right? In other words, this is true with every service, right? So what you want is, you want the optometrist to understand your vision and then use his skills, modified and tailor-made to your reality. Instead, you want him to give glasses that you could see through. And the same is with communication. Communication is when we talk to other people effectively, we're not only sharing our world, we're connecting our world to their world. So we talk in a way where we enter into their reality. Which is precisely the difference between human communication and animal communication. Why? Let's understand, when we understand what animal communication is, we'll understand what human communication is. Animal communication is transmission of signals. How does an animal communicate, apparently? Animals transmit status reports. So an animal transmits a signal, I'm hungry, I'm scared, I'm about to attack. Another animal is in the vicinity, is tuned into the frequency, picks up the signal and responds accordingly. But the animal who transmitted the signal is not talking to another animal. You follow? The animal transmitting the signal is just transmitting itself. That's all it's doing. It's projecting itself, its world, with no understanding, no appreciation, no acknowledgement of another world that's around it. That animal will transmit the signal whether there are other animals in the area or not. Doesn't make a difference. It's the animal's purely giving a status report of where it is. It's not talking to another animal. Right? That's animal communication. Human beings have a totally, or should have a totally different type of communication. Human beings, when they communicate, the communication is that tool that allows our worlds to connect. It allows me to go beyond my world and to understand your world. It allows your world to share and to take my world. So a human being, when a human being communicates, it's not just, we have the ability to go much deeper than just giving status reports, just sending a signal. When we talk, it's talking with the appreciation of who we're talking to. It's talking to another reality. It's talking in a way where that other person will absorb what I'm saying. It's talking in a way where I'm sensitive to what the other person needs to hear and will appreciate and will understand. Totally different type of communication. Now, why this is so important is because, to use an extreme example, if you ever walked into a room and there's an individual that talks incessantly, there's some people like that, right? They just keep on talking. You ever saw a person that talks and just has no idea if people are listening, not listening, people understanding, not understanding, right? Everyone's laughing because we all know people like that. That's an extreme example of animal communication in the form of a human being. That's exactly what it is. Some people send signals, they send status reports. They're not interested who's hearing and who's not hearing. Well, they kind of are. If you ask them, they'll say they are, but they're not really. I've seen speakers do that. Get up and talk above the crowd, completely. Like, I have no idea, not even attempting to read the crowd. Right? That's another context. I've seen people have a conversation where you see two people having a conversation and they're not. It's an incredible thing. Have you seen two people have a conversation where they both appear to be talking to each other, but they're totally not? Like, it's an amazing thing. You see this in babies, by the way, but unfortunately, a lot of times they don't grow out of it for some reason. little babies do that. Why? Because little babies are not supposed to have relationships. So when, it's an amazing thing. You ever watch like a 2-3-year-olds play? Like, the one talks about what they did yesterday in kindy, and he's talking to the other kid. The other kid responds about something that's happening at home. Right? It's very cute. You laugh because it's really funny. I just saw it happen with one of my kids a few weeks ago. It's like incredible. As they get older, you see them beginning to sort of have a conversation. So it's two people in a room actually talking to each other or appears to be talking to each other, and there's no connection. Why? Because there's signal sending. They're just saying what's on their mind. So because they're a physical human being, they realize you actually have to have someone to talk to. So therefore, there needs to be another human being there. But that doesn't matter if human beings listening or not. It's just you say. But as I said, people unfortunately sometimes don't grow out of it, and therefore what happens is as they grow older, they're doing the same thing. You see, sometimes people argue. It's an amazing thing. And you can, as an observer, as an outside observer, you watch them argue, and you can see where this guy's coming from, where this guy's coming from, and they're not talking to each other. You understand the ball, but they're not understanding each other. Because they're not actually attempting to talk to the other person. They're signal sending. Right? So therefore, we talk about communication being the basis of human existence. We talk about communication actually defining the human being, defining who we are. It's a particular type of communication. It's the communication that defines the essence of the human being. It's communication that allows the human being to connect. Connection is the word, to connect to someone else. It's about understanding that the purpose of communication is to allow us to be less absorbed in who we are. You see, sometimes people talk and it's actually strengthening their self-absorption. They're getting it off their chest. You know, some people say, whoa, did I give it to him? I feel so much better now. You say, that's interesting. Did the person listen? Don't know. I gave it to him. What's the difference? You know, the guy gets upset, he walks through him, he gives it over the head to the other guy, and he walks out the room. He feels good. The other person is more upset. The other person doesn't understand him. The person doesn't even hear what he said. Right? Totally irrelevant. But I did it. In other words, animal communication allows the animal to be more self-centered, to be more self-absorbed. The purpose of human communication is to allow us to be less self-absorbed, to allow us to go beyond ourselves, to allow us to connect to someone else. However, it sounds all good, but it's very, very difficult. And it takes a lot of reflection to actually reflect on our own style of communication. Maybe not in extreme ways, but sometimes to actually discover that sometimes when we talk, we actually are signal sending. We're not really talking. And we're not really communicating properly. Right? And how do we do this? How do we actually know? How do we actually discover? What's the gauge to know if we animal talking or human talking? How do we know if we're really communicating or we signal sending? So it's a very simple thing. Well, it's not simple, but the concept is simple. The only way we can learn to effectively communicate with other people is to first learn the art of listening to other people. Right, to use the words of Stephen Covey, which we quoted before, seek to understand and then be understood. See, if the optometrist is going to give the person his manufactured glasses, he needs to understand the person's eyesight first. If you want to say something to someone else, you need to understand them first. When you've understood them, then you can share your perspective. I believe that is why, in Pirkei Avot, the sage told us that he's never found anything better for the human being than silence. He obviously didn't mean that people should be quiet and not communicate. That would be absurd, because that's the essence of the human being. We are people of talking. By the way, not only in relationships, in everything. You know, in halakha, in Jewish law, everything is about verbalizing. If you sit down on a Seder night and you think about the story of going out of Egypt, but you don't say it, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. If you sit down with a Siddur and you think about praying, but you don't pray with your mouth, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. Everything is about talking. Everything is about speaking up. Torah learning is about talking and discussing everything. Right? But what he was saying is, I think, is that silence is the first step to communication. If you can learn the art of being quiet, meaning you can actually restrain your communication for a little bit to listen to someone else, to learn someone else, to discover someone else, to appreciate someone else, to really fully comprehend where they're coming from, then when you talk to them, you'll be talking to them, not at them, not signal sending. Yeah?
So, what if you try doing that for 20 years?
Yeah, no, you're right. Look, I think it's always good to try, but the reality is, like we've said on various occasions, at the end of the day, look, I think it's like this, right? All these strategies in many not all, but many relationships, when one side tries them, it brings it about in the other as well. So it does sometimes bring about an equal response. So, for example, because people always, people always ask the question about everything we talk about, that what it's a two-way thing, so you need the other person there too. So there's two answers. I think one answer is that sometimes when you really do it, like when you really show someone respect, it's easy to get respect from them. When you really listen to someone else, it's easy to get them to listen, right? But I will acknowledge it's not always the case. And sometimes, that's why sometimes you just have to set boundaries to the relationship, because it doesn't work. Sometimes you have to stop trying, and it depends on the relationship and what you have to do about it, but you know, it depends what type of relationship it is, but you're right, there's an incredible attempt to understand someone else, to listen to someone else, but it just doesn't bring about that response, even though you genuinely tried, and provided you have genuinely tried, of course, but it doesn't bring about that response, and then there's nothing you can do, and sometimes you have to look for other alternatives, but very often, however, it does. Real listening brings about real listening. In other words, either brings about listening, or at least it makes it easier to expect listening. Like, it makes it easier to say to someone, look, I've really tried to understand you. You see, the important thing is this. When I talk about understanding the other person, I do not mean agreeing with the other person. Right? Relationships is not about agreeing with each other. Because then there's no individuality. There's no point. Right? If in a relationship, me and you always think the same, then there's one of us too many, right? I mean, like, that's the idea. The idea is that we think differently. Okay, you know, in a marriage, for example, you hope that there's some sort of common interests and common values, and you agree on some things at least, because otherwise it makes it difficult to live. But there's still different perspectives. The idea is not to agree, but understanding is different to agreeing, right? Understanding means I understand where you're coming from, and therefore what I'm saying to you is not what you want to hear necessarily, it's not your opinion, but I'm saying it taking into account your world. I'm saying it being sensitive to the way you feel about it. I'm saying it with respect to your point of view. It's a lot of things. And very often when we do that really, really effectively, it's easy then to expect that to come back. It doesn't always, but it's easier to expect it to come back as well. Right. Yeah.
The answer to Rick's question is that the men should be in this room and not the women.
Women
are better listeners. Easily and spontaneously are able to enter into someone else.
Yeah.
That's not an easy thing for men.
Absolutely, I agree 100%. Yes. So what's your name? Bev. Bev, that's right. So Bev makes a very valid point, which is true, and I think we spoke about this once before. But And the reason why it's easier for men for women to do it than for men is the exact reason why the women in the room are not the men, because the women come to this more than the men do, right? But you're right. It's a big challenge. But that's why women sometimes need to bring it about first. But it is true that men generally find it are much more locked into their own world. Men find it much more difficult to enter into the world of another. That's true. And women find it a lot more easier. And that's why women are much better listeners, have more empathy. That's all true. But nevertheless, a relationship is two, and in a relationship, both have to do both, and you can't always generalize. There's, some men that are good listeners, some women that need to learn good listening, so it goes both ways. But it's a valid point. So, understanding the other comes from listening, right? And listening means to really listen. But again, listening means to listen, to understand. What does listening really mean? Listening means like this. Listening means when you listen to someone else talk, it means actually, for the real listening is, for the time that they are talking or communicating with you, to actually shut yourself down in terms of your own perspective, to put aside your view and to totally be focused on the view of the other. It doesn't mean you have to remain that way. It doesn't mean you have to agree with them. Afterward, you come back to your perspective, and you share your perspective, respecting their perspective, but it does mean that while you listen to them, you need to be totally focused on their view. I think I've told you the story before, but there was a great Hasidic Rebbe, he was called the Mittler Rebbe, and he would take people for audiences all night. Like, very often people would queue up, and they would come in, each person would ask them advice, they would ask them counsel, they would ask for a blessing, everyone had their own pickle, their own service, their own problems, etc. And this Mittler Rebbe, he had an attendant, he had a shamus that wasn't the brightest of fellows. He was a guy that helped out in the house, but he didn't get the depth of life experience necessarily. One time, at the end of the night, the Mittel Rebbe was exhausted, as you can imagine, but he wasn't just exhausted, he was schwitzing, he was sweating, he was perspiring, because he looked like he had been doing physical labor all night. So the shamus, the attendant, brings him a new set of clothing, and he says to him, Rebbe, I don't understand, you've been sitting in a chair all night, you haven't been working that hard, why are you so izgimutshed, why are you so schwitzing? So Mittel Rebbe said to him like this, he said, let me explain to you. And this is a great model in real communication. He said, when someone comes to me, they're coming to me because they're coming to me as a Rebbe. They're coming to me from my perspective. But, from my perspective to be effective, I have to first understand them. So the process works like this, he says, and he used the imagery of garments. Right? He says, when someone comes into my room and starts talking, I have to undress, he says, figuratively speaking. I have to undress from my garments, put on his clothes. In other words, put on his garments, put on his reality. So I can fully be absorbed and totally focused in his world and where he's coming from. When he's finished, he wants to hear my opinion, right? So I've got to undress again, go back into my garments, and formulate the response in my context, in my reality. But then when I'm finished that, I've got to undress again and learn how to take my response back into his world. So he said, I want to ask you, he says, if you sit all night and get undressed, you're not going to feel tired? Right? But that's an incredible model. In other words, communication works like this. You need to understand the other person. Understanding the other person means that you undress yourself first. Now, you know, we are scared to do that. You know why we're scared to do that? Because people don't want to leave themselves. Especially when we have differences of opinion. People are actually scared to detach themselves from their view, even temporarily, because I'm scared if I do that, I might actually end up seeing it your way. And people are scared to do that. Change is possible, but change is very difficult. People almost think it's a weakness to concede that maybe you have a point. People think it's a weakness to maybe, for me to see the world the way you're looking at it. To say, you know, you're right, I didn't think of it that way. Maybe it's the way you're seeing it. People think that's a weakness. The reality, of course, is a tremendous strength. That's the greatest human strength that's possible. They actually say, no, you know, I think the way you look at it is great. But not necessarily has to happen that way. I might still disagree with you. But either way, step one is I need to really listen. Really listen means to shut down completely and to totally absorb. And then when I'm finished, to come back. So, therefore, we are taught that the first step to communication is silence. That's why, by divine providence, in the formula that we developed of relate, ask comes before talk. You need to ask, which means you need to inquire, you need to understand and discover the world of the other before you can talk back. And the more we understand the world of the person in our relationships, the better we communicate. What does that practically mean? What does it actually mean? Someone once said, someone who wrote a book on relationships, he said he observed two people talking on a two-way radio. So he said, you know, it's a fantastic model. He wishes my relationships to be that way, where people actually, number one, don't interrupt each other, like, right? Just on a very, very basic level. Because on a two-way radio, you actually have to listen to the other person before you can start talking. Right? But obviously, it's a lot deeper than that. And as I've said before, real listening means, you know how sometimes, I'm sure we've all experienced this, and we experience it, sometimes when someone talks to you, while they're talking to you, you're formulating a response. Halfway through, you've heard the first three words, you think you know what they're saying already. You believe you understand them completely, and they just keep talking. You already formulating a response, now you're just waiting for them to finish so you can talk. That's not listening. Might be polite if you actually let them finish. There's a big difference in being polite or actually listening. Right? Parents, teachers, especially with vertical relations, right? So often we don't listen. Because particularly in vertical relationships, what I call hierarchical relationships, our worlds are so different apart. The world of a child and the world of an adult are totally different. When a child talks, a parent has to fully focus on the child's world. That's very difficult. Because a child has a different reality. It doesn't mean the parent has to agree with the child. Or the teenager, or the parent, or the student. Because it's a child's function, it's a parent's function sometimes not to agree. The parent's function sometimes to communicate something that the child doesn't want to hear. Because that's our responsibility, to guide, to persuade, to influence. But it's only effective if we fully understand them first. Fully understand them first means to actually understand it their way first, to listen to them properly first. Listening to someone means, physically, it means making proper eye contact with them. It means not formulating a response while they're talking, right? Listening also means the art of fully understanding the other person, so when they talk, you're sensitive and you're able to pick up the nuances and the hidden messages behind what is being said, not just the literal concrete words. There was a story of it's like, it's called listening with empathy, listening with sensitivity. There's a story with a great rabbi called Reb Chaim of Brisk, rabbi of the city called Brisk, and one time he was sitting with his students and someone knocked on the door and he had a halachic question. He says, just before Pesach, and he says to the Rabbi, I've come to ask you a lachi question. Is it possible to fulfill the mitzvah of the four cups on Pesach night with milk? So Reb Chaim says, that's a very good question. He took out a whole bunch of money and he gave it to him. He said, go home and make yontif. So his student said to him, he didn't ask you for money, he asked you a halachic question. He says, what don't you understand? If someone comes to ask you if he can fulfill the mitzvah of four cups with milk, he obviously doesn't have meat in his house for yontif. Right away, he picked it up. This guy obviously doesn't have a meal. It's not a matter he doesn't have wine. It's not only wine is the problem. He obviously doesn't have meat. So the problem is not can you make kiddush on milk or do you have to have expensive wine? The problem is this guy doesn't have what to eat for yontif. So I gave him the money to go and buy himself food for yontif. Right? That's listening beyond the surface. I think I once told you the story. There was I've forgotten the name of the rabbi, but there was a rabbi once sitting with his students and in a small shtetl. And there was a knock on the door, and there was a simple maidservant, a Jewish maidservant, knocked on the door, and she said, Rabbi, can I ask you a question? He says, yes. She says, Rabbi, what should I cook for dinner tonight? So right away, the students were about to burst out laughing, and he looks at them very sharply, and he silences them. And he looks at the girl, and he says, that's a very good question. I think you should make noodles. And she leaves. And the students look at him and say to him, what just happened here? Like, what was this all about? You don't come to a rabbi to ask what to make. I mean, you could try it. I won't give you very good advice. But right. But normally it's not the practice of coming to a rabbi to ask what to make for dinner. So he says to the students, let me explain to you. I know this girl. She works in a house of a certain wealthy family. She's a little bit simple. She probably went to her mistress that morning and said, nudged her, nagged her a little bit and said, what shall I make for supper? And she was probably very busy. So she was a bit frustrated. So she was probably a bit sarcastic. So she says, I don't know, go ask the rabbi. But she wanted it, right? And she took it literally. So she came back. Why else would she come? Right? So I wanted her to be happy. I wanted her mistress to be happy. So therefore, I answered the question. Right? That kind of thing comes from listening, tuning in, not just listening to the words. In Yiddish, there's a great... My father, Vashon, always used to tell me this. And he used to ask me, when he would tell me something, and he would say, are you listening? Because in English, listening is the same word. But in Yiddish, there's two words. To listen is to hear. To really understand is to der hear. Right? So he would say to me, du hearst or du der hearst? He says, he would ask, are you listening or are you listening? In other words, are you biologically listening, physically? Is it entering your eardrums or are you actually absorbing what I'm saying? Right? It's learning how to listen. Learning how to listen means that when someone says something, we don't naturally respond by giving advice, by evaluating what they've just said. Kid comes home, he's had a bad day in school. Teacher picked on me. Well, probably you misbehaved, right? That's the first response. Maybe that's something you do need to sit down with a child and explain, but that's later. Listening means... Not to evaluate what they're saying, not to give advice, not to offer an opinion. Listening means to really listen, and the way you respond, if you do respond, is by rephrasing, not by evaluating. By asking questions to understand, to make sure we really understand. Right? It's about learning how to listen to understand, not listen with the intention of replying. That's what it is really. Right? But the important thing is that it actually has to be something we develop an ability to do with sincerity. If you appear to be listening to someone and you try to make as if you're listening, you're not really appreciating their world, it's very quickly picked up as being manipulative. Right? Listening is not a technique. That's the important thing to understand. Listening is not a technique of communication. Listening is a real thing. Listening is actually learning not just to listen, but to really appreciate and respect the other person. When we talked about respect before, really, real respect gives us the ability to really listen. Once we've learned to listen, once we've mastered the technique of real listening, then we can actually begin to explore the strategies of real communication. Because what we're going to have a look at next week is to understand the second part of communication. Once we've understood to listen, once we've learned how to listen, then we can learn how to speak. Because speaking is incredibly important. In any relationship, sharing information, sharing opinions, sharing feelings, using effective communication to resolve differences. In every area of life, in every area of relationship, speaking effectively is incredibly important. And we're going to discuss it next week, the techniques and what does effective communication really mean. But it can only begin if we've learned to listen. When you learn to listen, we understand the other person, then you can talk to them. Have a great week.